Hey, everyone. Hello, it's Martin Willis, and welcome to the show. We have a great one for you this evening. We have Chris Cogswell coming up. And before that, we have Alejandro Rojas coming up with UFO updates. And speaking of updates, I'm going to give you a couple. So I've been telling everyone that I'm going to be going to the MUFON symposium this weekend, which I am. But I also told them there was going to be a bonus show, a bonus podcast out of that for the supporters of the show. And there will be. However, the one thing I'm not going to do, because it's just plain too tricky after talking to people there, is I'm not going to be able to do a live show from there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to record probably interviews at the MUFON symposium. I'll put together a YouTube. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you can do that. If you don't, you will see the YouTube video audio show of recording with different people. So that will be coming out probably on Sunday. It might be as late as Monday. And same thing with the bonus podcast for supporters. And I do want to thank everyone that supports the show. Anyone can do that wherever you listen. All you have to do is go over to podcastufo.com. And for $2 or more a month, or you can do a one-time yearly payment. All that information is on the menu bar under support the show. So it does cost money and to do the show and things like going to Cherry Hill, to the MUFON Symposium, all that. So I appreciate it very much. So I think, as far as I can tell, that is it. We're on live on KGRA Radio, and also we're live on YouTube. And that's every Wednesday. I say Wednesday, that's the old day. Every Tuesday at 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And so you can catch us live for the full shows over there anytime. And that's it for me for now. Alejandro, how are you?
I'm doing good.
That's good. And you had another very eventful weekend. Boy, you do.
I did. Yes, I was at Comic-Con in San Diego. And so that was a lot of fun. I mean, I was the biggest part was I got to do a talk for National Geographic at their party with Leland Melvin, an astronaut, and a couple other science people from NASA, which was a lot of fun. And so I got to hang out with Leland a lot. And it was kind of funny because I had been to space camp with National Geographic. And so I had a space camp, you know, blue jumpsuit, and I brought it and wore it just to make a joke out of it and stuff. And so he's like, well, then I'm going to wear mine. And so he wore his blue jumpsuit. Of course, his is real and has been in space. It's an astronaut's jumpsuit. But that was so much fun.
So they actually get to keep them. I think you and I had a conversation about that, what astronauts can keep and what they can't keep. They kept their boots for walking on the moon, which I think is pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. And they wear the jumpsuits a lot. So Scott Kelly, I got to interview him not too long ago. And for his talk, he wore the jumpsuit. But after his talk, he took it off. So, yeah. So often, I guess, when they want to represent NASA and stuff, they wear the jumpsuit, which is kind of cool.
That's amazing. So what you're filming now, you told me something about Blue Book. What was the deal with that?
So that's kind of the big news, really. So it's Blue Book. So I did get to the other real quick mention because it was fun and I want to kind of plug it. But I got to also meet Neil deGrasse Tyson, which was a lot of fun. And this is kind of funny because I posted a picture of myself and Karen with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And I did some video interviews that will come out on Den of Geek soon. But everybody's posting, oh, he doesn't believe in UFOs, all this UFO stuff. And, of course, I'm way into science, and he's a very important scientist, and he had some very incredible things to say in my interview. So it was an absolute pleasure to meet him. But, guys, you know, not everybody has to be into UFOs, and hopefully at some point, if we continue to have a relationship, I'll be able to broach the topic and maybe share some information with him. But, that wasn't what the interview was about, UFOs. So that was kind of funny. But what was about UFOs was Project Blue Book. And this is kind of making some news this weekend. It's kind of really making quite a few stories because History Channel is doing a show called Project Blue Book. And there was an activation there at Comic-Con. And I don't know why they call them activations. It was kind of funny. I even met one of the guys who is in charge of these different activations. And he didn't know why they called them activations. He was even laughing at himself because he's like, I don't know. But an activation is essentially an exhibit when a television show puts together a cool exhibit to promote their show. And Project Blue Book, I've got – this is really cool. This is a comic book that they gave us at the exhibit, and I want to show you this because this is the most important part about Project Blue Book is – look at this guy right here. Who's that? That's Dr. J. Allen Hynek. So this show is going to be centered around J. Allen Hynek and Project Blue Book. So you can see this is from a case 1972, which is, you know, they're going over actual cases and depicting these cases. So the actor is, let me get his name, Aidan Gillen. Look great.
Does he, real quick. Yeah. Does he look a little bit like Hynek?
Yeah, here, I've got actually a picture from the show, and yeah, look at him.
He does. Yeah, so anyway, they made you Google that. The one people that are listening, you can yeah. What's the show's exact name?
So Project Blue Book.
Just Project Blue Book.
So they make him look like Hynek. He kind of has a gruff voice. During the Comic-Con weekend, they released a trailer, and you can go see that at the History Channel page. In fact, if you go to openminds.tv, I posted. They also released three stories of three of the cases they're covering. So they released a story about Men in Black, about the Flatwoods Monster, and about this Gorman UFO case from the 1940s, 1948. And I want to talk to you about that one in particular in a second. But these are stories that are going to be featured on the show. And you can see that in the trailer. I mean, essentially, they did Vikings, which was huge. History Channel, it's a scripted drama. And it's great. If you haven't watched it, I love it.
Yeah.
And it's a very well-done scripted drama. You know, high production. They're out in Norway and all of this big. It feels like a movie every episode, almost like Game of Thrones or something. So they're doing the same thing with UFOs and Project Blue Book on this television show. When you watch it, you could see there. This is like a movie. Every episode's like a movie. Very high production value. Aidan Gillen from Game of Thrones, so he's huge. Robert Zemeckis is the producer. This is a guy who directed Back to the Future, Contact, and other things. He's a big fan of Spielberg. And, of course, Hynek was inspired the movie Close Encounters for Spielberg. But the other thing that they're going to do, and I think that's why they kind of focus on this Men in Black thing, is that although the show's based on true events, like they repeat and they're really – covering some of the big cases, they are adding a bit of speculation in there in that their description of the show says, you know, Hynek kind of starts to suspect that he's just a front man for a bigger secret project and they're not sharing everything with him. And of course, people in this field feel like that may be the truth. Not that we know that for sure, nor do we necessarily know that he felt that way. But that's going to be kind of some of the drama or some of the fiction added to this story. But it looks really, really good at this activation. So this is cool. When you first walk in, they kind of brief you. They have a staff person there who briefs you on what Blue Book was for people who were not aware. And then they ask you, have you had your own UFO sighting? In my case, I said yes. And it turned out practically everybody who walked in was saying yes, to my surprise. And, you know, we couldn't hear. They just sat us each down with our own person. But I can overhear people saying, yeah, I've had my own. So you describe your sighting. And then what they say is at the end, you'll be able to pick up a drawing of your sighting. So that was neat. You then go through to another room where they cover Flatwoods Monster, Lubbock Lights, Gorman incident, and you can kind of hear some audio from the show. They show you a trailer. Then you go into another room, and they've got this cool, like, radar and stuff like that in there, and you can send a message to space.
Wow.
And then on the other side, I did.
Were you friendly?
Of course I was friendly. Okay. I'm always friendly. Yeah, but I warned them. I was so friendly to the aliens that I told them, stay away. These humans are crazy. Actually, I'll tweet what I had posted here after the show. But I told them that humans are dangerous, not and they eat, you know, living creatures, other Earth creatures. And isn't that gross is what I said. So because I figured aliens will agree with me. So I warned them to stay away. On the other side of this room were some guys that were kind of in their 1950s outfits, and they were like working, supposed to be like Blue Book staffers or something. But they were the sketch artists who were sketching out our sightings. On the wall, there was some other cool stuff from other real UFO sightings as well. And I did do a Facebook Live of my tour through there. So go to my Facebook and you can watch, you know, see what this thing was like, because it was really cool. And sure enough, they did give me a picture of my sighting. And I did post that at openminds.tv, the picture along with my description of the sighting that they depicted there. So it was a really cool exhibit, or activation, as they call it in the Comic-Con world. But yeah, there's lots of stories coming out about this. And what's cool is, because it's real, I mean, it feels like X-Files, but this is now kind of like, you know, the godfather of UFOs, a true, you know, specialist, J. Allen Hynek, out there kind of doing the investigation. So if you couldn't tell, I'm extremely excited
now, for what the channel show. Did you say that's coming out on?
History Channel.
That's what I thought you said. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I sure hope you didn't give those aliens any ideas that this is a good place to eat, you know? So I have to worry about that a little bit.
Well,
so
if they were to come down here, and this is why I think it's important to be vegetarian. If they're to come down here and they're not vegetarian, how are they to choose what to eat? They'll see us, you know, do you eat this big round thing, or do you eat, you know, what are the creatures that you would want to eat? So if they see us eating creatures, they're like, oh, this must be a thing. Let's pick up some of these guys and try them out. And
thus the catamulation, you know.
And I wonder if on other planets, everything doesn't taste like chicken. What if it tastes like something else, just that's unique of Earth, that every living creature that you eat kind of tastes like chicken, is, as we say.
That could be. Wow. Never thought of all this stuff. Yeah. Way too much to wrap my brain around.
Oh, this Gorman sighting, just real quick.
Oh, yes.
You can read about this at the
Dogfight
History Channel. Yeah. But yeah, it's a really early dogfight from 1948. And it's cool that the History Channel is really pushing this case, because it's a cool one, and they must have read that when they came across these files. But essentially, it's this guy, he was a World War II fighter. 1948, he's with the Air National Guard. He's flying in his P-51. And he spots this light, an orb of light. He thought it was the tail light from another plane, but it passed near him. And the radar controller said, we didn't have anything on radar. There wasn't an aircraft that passed you. So he turns around and he kind of pursues this thing. He says he gets in within, he gets pretty close to it. And he described it as a 6 to 8 inch round light, that it was just kind of a solid light. No light seemed to be emanated past the diameter of this thing. So it was the characteristics of the light were strange. And then he began to chase it and fly around, and it kept banking around and doing all these things until it took off, just, you know, was gone, as we read about so many other times. But he said he pursued this thing for 27 minutes, and there were other witnesses involved, other aircraft. So there were a lot of credible witnesses along with this case. So it's a fascinating sighting.
Just and like, kind of like a Foo Fighter, what they were saying.
Essentially, yeah. It's a Foo Fighter experience after World War II with this Air National Guard pilot and his P-51, which was a plane that was, you know, used. That was one of our major, I think it was a Marine. The Marines used it in World War II, if I'm not mistaken, but someone could correct me. But anyways, it was a plane that we did use in World War II. But you can, at openminds.tv, I've got a link to it to the front page. I also tweeted it and Facebooked the story. You can also see it at the History Channel's Project Blue Book page, which people should explore, because it's really, really neat stuff.
Great. Awesome. Anything, I know we're just about out of time here, but has any, like, really good sightings, are you aware of any good recent sightings people are talking about? I haven't really, I've been involved in a project. I haven't really taken a look myself.
There are some people, the sightings that I've seen that are out there have been figured out, essentially, and I've posted about a few of those. If you go to the Open Minds UFO News group on Facebook, you could see a lot of those stories. Yeah. But yeah, nothing too exciting, in my opinion. It seems like everything has kind of been explained. So unfortunately, yeah, no big sighting recently that I'm aware of.
Well, all right. Well, hey, thanks so much, Alejandro.
My pleasure. Say hi to Chris. He's great. This should be a great show.
All right. Excellent. All right. We'll see you next week.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right, everyone. So our guest, Chris Cogswell, he received his PhD in chemical engineering, focusing on the study of nanomaterials for the use as catalysts and absorbents. And he got that degree at Northeastern University, and he has a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering and philosophy from the University of New Hampshire. He actually graduated the same year as my son. How about that? And he has a podcast, and it's on, you know, basically like fringe science claims and science, and it's called the Mad Scientist Podcast. And I started listening to one. I'm going to check that podcast out for sure. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. I think I got most of that right, didn't I?
No, you got it right. It's good stuff.
Yeah. So, Chris, I listened to you a while back when you were on Open Minds with Alejandro.
Sure.
I was pretty impressed. And but I don't remember listening to how you started getting a fascination for, I know it's not just UFOs, but UFOs are part of it. So along with your science interests and your philosophy interests, what really led you down the path of looking into the UFO topic, among other things?
So when I was a kid, I actually had what I would describe to be a near UFO sighting, or not, maybe not a sighting even. I, growing up, had very, very vivid dreams. I still have very vivid dreams. Seems to be something that runs in my family. Hmm. And so one night, as you know, any rambunctious 7-year-old kid, I stayed up way too late. I ate way too much candy. I snuck into my dad's, my parents' bedroom to watch the X-Files reruns and just like tore into, you know, those Christmas popcorn tins?
Yes.
Right. With like the different. Okay. Just tore into one of those. Right. Like, I'm sure there wasn't any caramel corn left in the morning. And I remember then falling asleep and then being woken up later by a green glowing something that I felt was looking at me from the closet, from the hallway of my parents, the hallway where my parents' bedroom was. And that memory just kind of stuck with me. You know, I had no idea what happened. I seemed to just wake up the next morning and everything was fine, whatever. And I had a couple of other similar kind of experiences where I would be kind of in and out of sleep and I'd have a scary nightmare experience kind of thing. And then I kind of just pushed it to the back of my head. You know, I was like, well, it's too, whatever. It's weird. It's a scary thing. I don't know what happened. And finally, I started getting older, you know, maybe around 13, 14, 15, around that age, I asked my mom, I said, you know, do you remember me saying anything about that? And my mom's explanation, as far as I can remember, it was basically, yeah, you used to get really bad fevers as a kid and your brain was boiling. You know, so basically, you know, I was in bed. I must have had a bad fever or something. And so and now as an adult, I kind of know some of the sources of some of, if I could be tricked, other people could be tricked. Other people can be mistaken. Other people can have scary experiences. And even if 100, you know, even if nearly 99% of them are just mistakes, what if there's that 1% that is a real experience or a real case of someone seeing something strange at night or being abducted or whatever? So really, it was a mix of my own personal experiences and kind of my love of science that made me want to ask these questions more, because again, you know, the history of science is filled with these things that we thought were completely impossible for generations, you know, and something is always impossible until it isn't anymore. Right. So in my mind, this is kind of one of those interesting questions where, you know, thousands of people every month report sightings, hundreds report things like direct contact. And I think regardless, again, of whether or not there's any ultimate, regardless of what the ultimate source of those cases are, there is something useful and interesting scientifically to investigate here. So that's kind of where I come from with all these questions.
Hmm. And I would notice on your show that you do other topics. I saw you did Mothman and other things like that. But on that's called the Mad Scientist Podcast. But you were just before the show when we were checking in, and we'll show that logo. Go ahead. So just before the show when we were checking in, you said that you also did another podcast. And what's did you say that had something to do with science? I mean, yes. Or space or something?
So we are starting a show with basically with Dave Scott from Spaced Out Radio, where the second Wednesday of every month we are going to be talking about these cases from the lens of science and skepticism and kind of questioning really some of those ideas. So we're calling them Reality Paranormal, and so they're going to be going out on a Tuesday. Or Wednesday nights, sorry, the second Wednesday of every month nights. So be sure to check those out. And I'll put the links up on my Twitter page and everything and give you those as well.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah. So I figured we could probably get this part out of the way by talking about MUFON and your short stint. How long were you actually with MUFON?
I think I was at MUFON maybe 2.5 Scaramucci's. Maybe. I don't know.
Let's see, that was 11 days.
Yeah, no, I was there longer than that.
His time was 11 days.
A Scaramucci is 11,
about
right?
So a month, right?
No, yeah. So we're talking maybe then, eight to 10 mooches of my time at MUFON. So I was there for between 4 and 5 months. My full-time there was... and that includes kind of me initially getting involved in the organization, wanting to become a member, wanting to help do some research, kind of trying to get a look into their reports and, you know, the books, so to speak, and to my eventual resignation.
So, but before we talk about your resignation, you had a really good goal of getting things done there. How was that progressing in the right direction before the you know what hit the fan?
So it was progressing. It was the thing with MUFON that I think a lot of people not actively involved in investigations don't realize is that MUFON is really more of a it's not like a big very organized organization. It's very focused on individual states. And so part of what I was hoping to accomplish was trying to consolidate some of that energy. There are people in states doing wonderful work, doing really good investigations, spending their own time, spending their own money, you know, to go out there and do these investigative cases and things, and then that information doesn't go anywhere. It just ends up on a server in the basement of MUFON headquarters.
Yeah, a lot of people complain about that.
Yeah, and it's a valid complaint. I mean, you would think that with all of the cases that they get and with all the time and everything that you'd be able to make something really useful. And what I found was that it was not a lack of information that stopped that from happening. It was more of a lack of clear direction and a lack of energy and motivation. We managed to probably the biggest thing that we accomplished while there was the creation of a, I hope it's still going and I hope it's still available to people. And if anyone emails and it's not available anymore, then that's a shame. But what we were able to do was that MUFON database, one of the biggest things keeping MUFON from giving that database information out to other researchers were concerns about personally identifying information. So, you know, if you make a UFO report, you don't want then your name and address and cell phone number and everything else, your contact info, to go out to the, you know, anybody who says, I want to investigate, I want to research. You don't want anyone to get that your information. So one of the biggest concerns was ensuring that that information went out to the right people. And so and was kept safe in cases where we didn't want it to go out. So
we're going to have to hold it. We're going to have to keep that thought, if you would.
Absolutely.
Write that thought down. We'll get back to it. So we're coming up on a break right now. This is Martin Willis of Podcast UFO on KGRA Radio. And my guest is Christopher Cardswell. We'll be right back after this commercial break. All right, everyone, that's it for the free part of the show. If you want to listen to full shows and archives and bonus shows, such as we're doing at MUFON this coming weekend, all you have to do is support us for $2 or more a month. There's also an option to pay a one-time per year fee. So check that out on podcastufo.com. I want to thank a few people that helped out with the show. Alejandro Rojas, our guest, of course, Chris Cogswell, Evan for doing the engineering work in the background, and Peggy for managing the Facebook page, and Bill over at KGRA Radio. Thanks, everyone, and we'll be back with actually in Mac Maloney's studio at a radio station next week, live, and so that should be a lot of fun. That's down in Exeter, New Hampshire. We're going to be videoing that, too, for anyone that wants to watch it on YouTube. Thanks a lot, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.